Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and I'm at the Black Bear Bonanza down in Bentonville, Arkansas. And right now I have here in the studio with me, that's the Living the Dream Outdoor Property Studio.
Yeah, and that's right.
I got Daryl Hyman, the owner, with me. I also have Hunter Wallace. He has a company called Ingwe. Yes, I said it right?
Yes, sir. That's it.
Ingwe.
I'll tell you what, I was over there looking around when I walked in the main, you know, area where the raffle and everything is, and I walked by his stand, and I'm like, that is the coolest stand to backpack in somewhere. And I picked it up, and I think it weighed all of
five pounds. Now, we're talking deer hunting stand.
Hang on, hang stands. I mean, for some, you got to go backcountry. You remember, Bill, back in the 80s, we had those old stands that weighed 200 pounds. We'd hike back in there in the forest land. It's not, I couldn't do that now if I wanted to, but
I couldn't either. That's what they make UTVs for, for old guys.
Yeah. So, Hunter, tell us a little bit about your company and how it got formed and a little bit what it's about.
Well, kind of like what you were saying is you get all these super heavy stands and stuff, and they're real comfortable and all, but they're not applicable for hunting here in the mountains and in the Ozarks and all. So whenever I was in college, I was moved up here from central Arkansas, and I was like, you know, I'm really not loving carrying all this on public land and all. So I was like, I got to cut down weight where I can. So switch from hunting out of backpack to just using fanny packs and all. And I was like, I still got to cut some weight. So started tinkering with stands and all. And then I finally was like, you know, I could make my own doing this. And so went and spent a couple years just prototyping and all, and kind of came up with the design. What you saw in there is actually the 2024 version. And it's a little bit heavier than the 2023, but did a bigger seat and a bigger standoff, give you a little bit more room. So it bumped it up on the comfort level a whole lot.
Now, do you have one for a guy that needs a little bit bigger seat than you have currently?
Not yet, but I have some in the works on it. We're gonna have a few different products come out probably towards the end of this year, early next year. We'll have climbing sticks. We'll have bigger stand. We'll have saddle platforms, and then a couple other little things that I've been working on too.
So where are you based out of?
Prairie Grove, Arkansas.
Perry Grove.
Okay. Perry Grove, Arkansas. But you notice, Daryl, now he's young enough, he hasn't hit that middle age spread yet, so
that's right.
His behind will fit on that.
Oh, it fit. I'm sure it fits as well, you know.
We'd have a little hangover, you know.
I had to put it 3 feet high so I get up and stand up every now and then. So what are they made out of? It looked like a really unique kind of metal product.
Yeah, so it's all aluminum, and then we water jet, and then we'll take and run it through the mill and get all the notching and everything and kind of clean stuff up.
Okay.
But for the finish on it, we use a Cerakote finish, so it's super durable. It'll hold that color. And I spent a long time trying to figure out which exact color I wanted to get it to blend really good kind of year round. So it's a brown finish that's got some little bit of green undertones to it. So if you're in a little bit shadier, greener area, it'll look a little bit more green. You get it into later season, it's going to kind of gray up some and really kind of match that tree.
You know, for me, it looked cool. Like even where I hunt at my ranch, take that thing in like during the rut or whatever to hit a good spot. Now, I don't go like 30 feet like I used to at 25. I'm like good for like 10, maybe 12 feet.
Traditional
archery, that would be ideal.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's what I do is strictly longbow.
Yeah.
And so that's what I really love. And I kind of made it specific to what I like, but more people are liking it. So we brought it to the market this past summer, but I really love those small trees and the thick areas, especially cedars.
Yeah.
Cedars are great.
So you don't have to get real high in a lot of that. And with traditional archery, that's great. So what kind of stick bow do you use? Longbow?
Yeah. Longbow. It's a Big Jim Thunderchild.
Okay.
And I absolutely love it.
One of the, I'm a traditional guy too. And I grew up where Earl Hoyt's factory was in Bridgeton, Missouri. And he made me a longbow, 60 pounds, and it said custom made for Daryl Hyndman by Earl Hoy Jr.
Really?
And
you
I
never told
it.
Me that story.
Yeah.
He's holding
you know
out
the gator, yeah, the gator at the main office? So yeah. I was going gator hunting, and I wanted to kill it with a longbow.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in. I said, hey, can you make me one? And he put that together. And
wow, that is awesome. Well, cool. I got to be honest about this whole deal. The first thing that went through my mind when I saw that teeny tiny lightweight stand that weighs 5 pounds, I can carry more snacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can.
More water.
Yeah, right? I don't have to carry so much other stuff. But
exactly,
I can remember
exactly.
Way back in the day, you know, when there wasn't really anything like this, and some of us in our little shops made stands, and I made a little stand out of just an aluminum pipe one mm-hmm. time, and it had a thin plywood platform on it. That thing was pretty rickety, you know. It yeah. depended on little spears to stick into the tree.
Yeah.
Well, I was having a real good afternoon one time until that thing folded up.
Uh-oh.
Hey, have you slid down on those old stands? Like those old? I mean, it's the scariest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
But his right there, he's got, what kind of buckles are those that hold it in?
So it'll be two cam buckle straps on it.
Yeah.
So how you'll set it, you'll put that top one on and then pull it up so that it's level and you can really cinch it down. And then whenever you go to cam that down, put your hand in the middle and it'll lock that on there, and then put that bottom one up to shore
okay.
it up on there.
Yeah, it looked very well designed. That's
well,
what
thank
I
you.
Like
it's been thought through for sure, but that part that locks on to the tree, it's really going to grip that tree as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that sand's not going anywhere.
No.
Well, I can remember a cold, icy, snowy morning about 30 years ago. It wasn't too far from the house, but I'd run up an oak tree, and I didn't really think through this whole process. There was a whole layer of ice on the north side of that oak
right,
tree.
Right.
And where did I put the grip?
Right on the ice.
Well, about 30 minutes later, I'm about to have sleep. Whole thing slid like 3-4 feet down the tree trunk. Now you talk about your heart hitting the top of your
head.
That'll
wake you up.
Big time. But I know in any situation like this, bow hunters are great for this. It is absolute safety,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that's a teeny tiny little stem. What's the dimensions on that platform for your feet?
It's 24 deep and then 15 wide. And then you mentioned on the safety, I don't know if y'all saw it or not, but there's a hook off to the side of the base.
Yeah.
And that's for whenever you're climbing up, you hang that on your belt loop.
Okay.
And so it's your hands free getting up that tree.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow,
so,
that's even better.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. I've got some buddies, and whenever I first was coming out with it, I told them about it. Like, well, that's cool and all.
Right.
And I was like, no, just try it the first time you go up the tree. And they did, and they called me. They're like, dude, that really makes a difference.
So you just hang it on your buckle?
Yep, I hang it off my belt loop on the back, so I can be working sticks and getting everything set up, and then whenever you're up at the height you want, you've got your lineman's belt on there, so you can kind of lean back and you're totally hands free to set it how you need to and all that, because I've had stuff in the past where I'm trying to balance it on a knee and holding on with the rope and so
that's why some of us still have scars all over our body, you know.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, you sliding down a tree, though, you can really put the hug on a tree trunk.
Yeah.
It costs you some hide. But
yeah, for sure. So what's your website?
So you can look us up at www.ingwe-gear.com.
And Ingwe is I-N-G-W-E.
Yep.
Okay.
And yeah.
Tell
yeah.
us a little
yeah,
bit about
the story
background.
Behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's hear the story.
Yeah. So Ingwe is the African word for leopard.
Right.
And so, whenever I was thinking about what I wanted to name the company, I was like, I want something that's kind of unique, something that's not just you see everywhere or whatever. I want somebody to see it and remember it. And I was reading one of Capstick's books, Death in the Long Grass, and him and my dad were actually pen pals when my dad was a kid. So
no
we had
kidding.
All his books, and
that's
he wrote
awesome.
Big things in the front,
oh,
stamped
awesome.
Elephant hairs in the front, and
wishing
my dad happy birthday and all that. So I grew up reading these books, and I was reading through, and my favorite chapter was on leopards.
Yeah.
And so I got to that chapter, and at the beginning it says Ingwe on it a couple times,
sure.
And I was like, oh, that's great. They'll go, they get up in the trees, they'll bring their kills up in the trees, and I was like, that's it. So
Ingwe, I love it.
Ingwe, I do too, and I know another market for this lightweight. I've worked the last 15 years or so part-time in the Yucatan of Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
We deer and turkey hunt. There's a lot of skinny trees there. But
yeah.
You've been down there with me.
They're terrible.
In the
wish I had his stand with me.
I do too.
Because they put us up there with those little round sticks wired together. It was like you could use it from Walmart Distributing, all that little twine. You know, and they got us standing up there at 12 feet waiting for a rocket deer to go by, and I'm like, this is dangerous.
Man. And besides that, I was on a stand one time on a little water hole. It was a two-tiered stand. I was up or my son was up 7 or 8 feet maybe, and then up 4 or 5 more feet I was there. He was hunting with a bow and I had a shotgun. Mm-hmm. But we had a mountain lion permit, so was waiting for a puma to come into the water hole. We saw everything but a puma, you know. But the guide we had, he was a young fellow, probably a teenager. He shinnies up a little sapling about 15 feet, and he gets that thing to swaying. He grabs another one over the way, and he ties his hammock off between those two saplings.
Oh, my God.
He rolled from hammock.
No kidding.
He rolled over in the hammock and went to sleep.
I was going
to
say, I wouldn't get any hunting done. I'd sleep the whole time.
Well, that's what they're doing, too.
He'd wake up. It was like he had a timer, built-in timer. He'd wake up about every 2 hours, send you orders. Agua, ask us if we wanted water. He had a whole pack full of water. That's all he did. 14 hours we stayed on stand.
Were you hunting bracket deer then, or?
Yeah, we were hunting bracket deer as well, and I actually had one come up, and I could see the little spike, but the guide laying in his hammock couldn't see him. I kept asking if I could shoot. No, senorita.
But you got a good one last year.
I did. Yeah. Spike's almost 6 inches. World record.
That is a good one.
Yeah, I got a good one, too. We both got really lucky there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
You know, honestly, I'm not kidding,
Hunter. But wouldn't those stands work down there?
Your stand. If a guy goes to Mexico to hunt the jungle, I mean, they put you up in some crazy stuff. And that stand, you could pack that in your pack, throw it on the plane, and it's nothing.
Yeah.
It's 5 pounds. And those stands we got up in, they were okay. They worked. But big guy like me call them up there, I wasn't real happy with some of those stands.
Yeah. Cut a little sprout and lean it up on the stand and got cross standards, you know, literally tied with twine or baling wire. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, it makes
good experience, but seeing that would work great because that would have really made a difference. And you don't have to get real high up there because it's not real big tree. Yeah. It's more brush. And
like I said, my favorite setup of all time is getting in a cedar tree where you got all that back brush behind you.
Sure.
About 8 feet, 8-10 feet, where you get the good shot angle, especially with traditional. You know how it is.
Yeah,
you get way up there, it's a lot harder shot.
Yes.
Well, we've got, of course, in our part of the world, we've got a tremendous amount of public property, you know. Mm-hmm. Guys, our conservation department owns 1 million+ acres. The U.S. Forest Service owns a couple million.
Well, and down here, too. I mean,
yeah, we got the same way in Arkansas.
Yeah.
But how many places have you found? You found a super hot scrape and a skinny little tree there, you know. And this would be the perfect stand for that situation. Yeah. And I get to everybody that's hunted very much, we all sometimes overextend ourselves. Instead of walking in a mile, we'll wind up going in 5 miles. And when you got a lot of gear to carry, that really works on you.
Yeah,
it does get rough and tough on you. But, man, this is perfect. I just keep thinking there's so many other pieces of equipment that could go with that lightweight stand. But, hey, I'm going to talk to my friends in Mexico. You may have a whole new market.
Call Javo.
Call Javo, yeah. Well, I want to be this young man's Mexican
connection.
Connection.
So the Mexican connection.
You bet. The Mexican connection.
For stands.
Yeah.
For stands. For not the other kind of Mexican connection.
I almost got a job with a real company. It was only real made in the United States right up here at Mexico, Missouri. And a guy was always sending me reels and asking to send me some to take to Mexico one time. Yeah, take them, you know. Well, the fly fishing guy that I was dealing with down there, he had a very good personal friend who ran a lumber company and all things.
Sure.
And it was awesome. But I took a bait casting reel, but had no rod. But this guy had a rod he could loan me. Mm-hmm. Went upstairs over the this lumber company. It's like a huge apartment up there, and it was like a museum. This guy had pictures of Ernest Hemingway.
Oh wow!
Oh no kidding.
Yeah, big life size things on the walls, just racks and racks of rods. But he gave me a G. Loomis rod to use. Put that reel on. Oh, I cut tarpon, barracuda, all sorts of things. But we were in a fancy restaurant one night, and I was talking about this reel, this first one in Mexico.
Yeah.
And I noticed an old gentleman table next to him, he's eavesdropping, you know. And in a few minutes, he told my guide he wanted to talk to him. They went in the next room. They come back in a few minutes. I thought, just, you know, business stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, it turned out that guy was a local dentist, and he wanted that reel I had. He offered Captain Encalada $500 for this reel. And, of course, he didn't even mention that to me. But
of course.
But after our fishing was done, we went back to the lumber company to return the bait casting rod. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman couldn't speak a word of English, but he wanted to take that reel off of that rod And I told Miguel, the captain, I said, just tell him he can keep it. He's been so kind. So he let him keep that reel. And Captain Encalada's just got this horrible frown on his face. Well, we walked, got out on the street. He said, Cooper, you just stirred up a hornet's nest. I said, what did I do wrong? He said, remember the old guy in the restaurant? That was a local dentist. He wanted that reel, offered $500 for it. And, of course, I knew you couldn't do that. Now you give it to the lumber guy, who is the best friend of the dentist.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, he'll be telling that dentist he slept with you to get that reel.
Yeah, he will.
So deals in Mexico, man. We got to check
the cool
it out.
Thing about these stands, too, I imagine your shipping cost is pretty reasonable because they weigh like 5 pounds. So.
Yeah, we'll get it in a pretty small box and stuff, so it's pretty reasonable.
I mean, that would fit in a small suitcase, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Or a duffel bag. Well, you have a big hunt, not even a big hunting backpack, but I did it where you can set it in most backpacks. So not
inside
the real small,
the backpacks,
not the real small ones, but you get like medium, large size ones. You should be able to set it on that backside.
What's your retail price on this?
They're $575.
Yeah, I mean it's cool. I think I'm gonna have to go buy one.
I think you need to, and then loan it to me. You know, great thing for another thing, and you're gonna laugh. Stands like this, they should buy. Remember the old A-Micer stands? That's some of those I slid down the trees with. But I'd use that bottom platform, and this platform would be perfect to train my duck hunting dog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, you could, if you're hunting flooded timber, you could put that right on it.
Yeah, it would work.
Dog would sit on it perfectly.
Yeah, I trained my dogs. I put it up just a couple feet, and I used the word stand. When I used the word stand, that's where they went.
Right there.
Yeah. Work like a charm. Mm-hmm. So, hey, we're getting in the duck hunting business, too.
Yeah, we are.
He's going to have a duck stand. You know what? The duck stand would sell for $975 because duck hunters like me and you are crazy.
Oh, yeah. we're always looking for a way to be abused.
So, hey, tell us the website again and give us your phone number.
Yeah, it's www.ingwe-gear.com. That's INGWE-gear.com.
Yeah.
And then it's all going to be on my cell phone. So you can reach me at 501-786-4766.
That's awesome. So we had, when we were at Safari Club in Nashville a few weeks ago, Bill had met up with the people with Baku, which is an electric bike. And I think I'm going to get one.
You got to loan that to me, too.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is about that bike, this is a perfect combo.
There you go.
To take that electric bike in the backwoods. With a 5-pound stand.
This has turned into a brainstorming session.
So maybe some joint venture,
absolutely.
A tree stand and get a bike free or something.
I'll let you work on that end. Yeah. Well, Hunter, man, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on here.
It has.
On the program, man. And I always tell folks, hey, you know what? We're living our outdoor dreams, and we encourage our listeners to get out and live their outdoor dreams as well.
I'm
Bill Cooper.
Hi, I'm Steve Stoltz with Drury Outdoors, and you're listening to Living the Dream Outdoors Podcast with Bill Cooper and Hunter Heineman.
Slow down and enjoy the simple things in life. Welcome to Huzal Valley Resort, providing family fun since 1979. They offer floating, and you can choose from canoes, rafts, kayaks, and inner tubes on a beautiful, crystal clear Huzal River. Lodging, let us be your home away from home. Choose from a variety of lodging units while still enjoying the great outdoors. With over 2.5 miles of river camping on the crystal clear Huzal, we're sure you and your family will find the perfect spot to pitch your tent or park your RV. Have fun and let us help you get the most of your stay. Check out our guided trail rides and Karen's Cafe menu. There's something for everyone at Huzal. There's a campground store on site that has everything you need for your trip. Whether you're in need of gear, grub, or something else, chances are they've got it. And their campground has RV sites and primitive sites for all your camping needs. If you like the adventures of camping with a cozy bed at night, we have a variety of different lodging units to choose from. But Huzal Valley, there's always something going on out there. Check them out on Facebook, or if you want to make a reservation, simply call 1-800-367-4516.
Hi, I'm Steve Stoltz with Woodhaven Custom Calls, Mossy Oak Camouflage, and Drury Outdoors. My turkey tip for the week this week is, don't be scared to use a decoy. There's a lot of myths about decoys, but I can tell you this. The Avian X Trophy Tom decoy is one decoy I will not hunt without. Doesn't mean I carry it all the time. There is the time and place for a decoy. But if you need a decoy, use one. For instance, open areas, fields, places that you're set up where you know the turkey is going to see you from a distance, man, those decoys really work. Those Avian X is what my personal favorite decoy is. And I use an Avian X HDR Jake, a lookout hen, and a feeder hen. I like to use three decoys if I can. It just makes it look more natural. Turkeys like to go to the flock. They like, they're social birds. So when they see multiple birds rather than just one, they're far more inclined to come to your location. And be smart about how you set your decoys. Don't set your decoys straight out in front of you. And don't set them where the turkeys will see you in between, basically putting you between the decoy's vision and the turkeys. Set them out to one side or the other. So you want to put them, if the turkey's coming from your left, you want to put the decoys a little bit to your right, about 10, 15 yards. And that's the other thing. Don't put the decoys too far from your location. You want the turkeys to come in close for a shot. You hear a lot about reaping with a decoy. Well, let me tell you, it works. And I don't leave home without my Trophy Tom. And I use a real turkey fan that I spread out, salt down, and let it dry out. And I put it in that Trophy Tom. And I can tell you this, every single gobbler that I took last spring was directly a result of using the Trophy Tom, using that visual to bring that gobbler in for the shot. I'm Steve Stoltz, and that's my turkey hunting tip for the week.
Hey, everybody. This is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Hindman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and I'm down with the Living the Dream Outdoors properties people. We're down at the Black Bear Bonanza in Bentonville, Arkansas. In the last segment there, I had Hunter Wallace on. He's a young man that's come up with Ingwe stands. That's an African word for leopard, but he's got like a 5-pound tree stand that we've all just been smitten with. I think we'll all have one before this deal is over. For all you people who have been carrying those heavy backpack style climbing tree stands, this is a platform. You'd have to have sticks with it, but the platform weighs like 5 pounds. So it's a small platform, and the younger guys will go nuts over these things, but us old guys kind of got excited about them too.
Yeah.
But on the program during this segment, I got Kyle Kentzel. He's the owner of the Spare Rib Inn back home in Steelville, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
Kyle, good to have you on the program, man.
Nice to be here.
Hey, and you're traveling with Daryl Hyman and the Living the Dream Outdoor Properties people. How are you associated with them?
He lives a dream. I build the dream. it's the name of my construction company. We do all kinds of different deer stands, custom structures, just you name it, we build it.
Well, you actually built, what you call this, the display we're in here at the show.
Convention booth.
It's a pretty fancy deal. Very, very rustic. Got, I guess that's cedar poles.
Yes, sir.
Looks like. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful exhibit here that we've got down at the show. Been lots of people stop in here. And I noticed people looking at the structure of the setup itself. But you mentioned you're in the construction business and you own a restaurant. Now, how did those two come together?
I tried to get out of the restaurant. I tried to get out of the construction biz. It's hard on a fella. I decided to buy a restaurant. realized that the restaurant in Steelville, Missouri, it's an awesome thing. Lots of history and all that stuff. And the wife worked there. Went out for 20 years since she was a little girl. And then that's where I met her. Got a lot of love for the place, so we just decided to buy it and see what we could do. We didn't want to move out of Steelville and wanted to own a business, and bought the restaurant and realized that I'm not meant to be in one spot for very long. And I've done construction my whole life, so I just continued with it, and then I met a lot of influential people through the restaurant. It's a good network. Met Daryl and everybody else I work for.
Everybody in that part of the world has been in a spare rib inn at one time or another. I used to run a UPS route through Steelville there many moons ago. I've eaten lots of meals at spare rib inn, man. And I used to travel from my home in north of St. James, go all the way over spare rib inn just to eat breakfast there.
Yeah, that's what we're known for all day. There.
But, you know, maybe I'm a little bit envious. I've thought about restaurants at times in my life, but I worked my way through college in a hamburger joint, you know, and that kind of sired me a little bit. Yeah. I think if I was in the restaurant business, so I'd weigh 500 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you. You know, they say never trust a skinny cook.
Yeah. No, the wife does most of the cooking. She's pretty good. I'm just the handyman.
You're the handyman.
Yeah, I fix stuff when it breaks.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned history there a minute or so ago. How long has a spare rib inn been around? It's a fixture in Steelville.
Sure. It started as a little barbecue shack in 1929 in that parking lot.
1929.
Yep. I think they came through. I've got pictures from the 40s when the Palmers opened it up. We have lots of pictures around the restaurant, lots of history. Lots of the customers been coming there for most of their lives. I mean, I call it the bar for sober people. And they'd come drink my coffee instead of my beer. But good times. Lots of local banter and, you know, everybody's friendly, open environment, little hole in the wall.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I used to enjoy going in there. Have you still got the big round table just you come in the door?
Oh, yeah, I think they would go on strike if I got rid of that.
I'm sure they would. I used to love coming there, plop myself down right in the middle of a bunch of old guys I didn't even know, you know.
Nothing's changed.
And strike up a conversation with them. And as an outdoor writer for 54 years, I've been in the business. I found out if you want to know anything about the local hunting and fishing spots, you know, go to your best local restaurant where the locals hang out.
Oh, yeah.
And, hey, strike up a friendly conversation. It's amazing what you can find out.
Sure. Lots of. I enjoy all the old stories and history.
If I was in your business, I'd be tempted to put a recorder under that table, you know. You could write a book off of it.
Might be a good money-making scheme.
Might get you shot, too.
Yeah.
But what a charming place, though. And there's, I guess, been a number of owners over the decades.
Sure. We bought it from the Martins. They had owned it since 91.
That's a pretty good run.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually. The last 3-4 owners still come in every day and eat.
Really?
Yeah.
Can't get over it, can
they? No, and they love to see the place still alive and thriving.
Well, one of the crazy things I remember about the spare rib inn, I was in a UPS truck one time and headed east, I guess, and you know, there's a stop sign right outside at a junction there. Well, there's a semi coming from the south, and he lost a tire. Here it come right down the street. I'm thinking, that thing's going to go right through spare rib. And it went up the alley there by the side.
Yeah.
And landed in a ditch back there somewhere. But man, that could have wiped out a few tables.
Sure, there's been a couple big events. Spare rib's been hit by a couple vehicles over the years.
Oh, built truck I would in the imagine 50s.
you hear stories.
Oh, I'm sure you do. But again, what a charming, charming place. If you've never been to the Spare Rib Inn, you're going through Steelville, you got to stop at the Spare Rib Inn. Because I come there on weekends a lot of times and see the place just packed with people coming from out in the countryside that have been on the rivers and out in the Forest Service or wherever, the hunters and fishermen. They're a pretty big part of your business?
That's pretty much the majority of it. Besides all the locals, I mean, that's definitely a local staple. I mean, deer season.
I bet that's a big time.
No, I bet.
Do you open early during deer season?
Oh, yeah. We open at 4:30. Just
really?
Everybody get in there and get a good meal.
I bet you make biscuits and gravy by the 55-gallon barrel.
Yeah. We can't serve enough eggs or coffee. Yeah. They love our coffee.
Well, we know how important it is, particularly deer season. It can be pretty cold out there sometimes. Man, I just don't think about going to the deer woods. I get a good breakfast in my belly. Sure. You know, a lot of guys like to go out deer hunting and come back in about 9 or 10 o'clock and then cook a big breakfast to their own or something. That's a big bad mistake. You need to eat first and then go out there. Yeah,
no. So we open up early, get your belly full of before we go sit out in the woods and freeze for
I've killed a number of deer over the years from those guys getting off their stands at 9 or 10 o'clock and they're walking through the woods and they're pushing deer out of their area into my area, mm-hmm. you know. So, hey, I can always get off that stand at noon or 1 o'clock and then go back to Spare Rib and get another meal, you know.
Sure.
good way to go, man. Well, what kinds of foods are you serving these days at Spare Rib? It's always been the staples, you know, the good old breakfast menu. And
good old home cooking, breakfast served all day. We have omelets. We have new Merrimack stack, we call it. It's, pile on what you want. Start with hash browns, bacon, sausage, top it all off with gravy.
Now, I haven't had that yet, so it's been a while since I've been in there, I guess. I'm going to have to get by and give that a whirl. I love breakfast, man. Breakfast is just...
Sure.
I don't know if I starve to death all night. I won't eat enough before I go to bed or what, but when I get up in the morning, I'm ready for a good meal.
Sure. And that's the beautiful thing about our restaurant. We have quite the variety. We have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There's something for everybody.
That makes for some long days, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Sun up, sun down, 7 days a week. But we're always there for you.
Wow. I'll say I've never stopped by when I wanted to eat at the Spare Rib and the doors were locked up. I've never had that happen once, but I've had it happen with other restaurants. And I don't get it, particularly restaurants in these little country towns and everything not opening up till later. You know, I've seen them open up at 7, 8 o'clock, and that's a little bit late for a lot of us.
No, we open at 5:30 every day, and we have about 10 older gentlemen that it's their job to make sure to give the waitress.
They're the grading committee.
Yes, yes, they're very reliable too. They don't miss days. And if they do, somebody knows where they're at.
Yep,
they don't know
what's going on.
Well,
I'll be dog. Well, did you guys you doing catering or any other kind of stuff like that out of Spare Rib?
We do catering. Not a whole lot of it. You know, we're just a small establishment. You know, we have awesome help, awesome cooks, awesome waitresses. Some of the waitresses have been there for 25, 30 years. You know,
wow.
Some of the cooks that they came along with it when we bought it 5 years ago, and we're awesome to have it.
Yeah.
And,
I bet they could tell some stories, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've often wondered, you know, I used to write a column for a magazine out of St. Louis called The Gravel Bar Gourmet.
Oh, yeah.
All it was about was cooking on the out on the gravel bars, you know. But it was just intriguing over the years of people that would send me kind of simple recipes, but good meals, you know. Hey, would you try cooking this out on the gravel bar or that? I mean, I had one restaurant get a hold of me one time out of Raleigh. They had a pretty fancy hamburger. And I tried to duplicate it out on a gravel bar, but it wasn't quite the same. But I did have a secret ingredient for every dish out there, and I hate to give people this tip, but you know what it was? Take a wild guess.
Sand.
Sand. You're a river man. You're the only person that's ever got it right.
I've done a lot of cooking on the gravel bar.
You know how it is.
A little grit in the teeth never hurt nobody.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Hey, a lot of the wild critters have to have grip for their bellies, you know, so it won't hurt us either. Well, here in the last minute or so, Kyle, tell people where that historic restaurant sits.
It has been the same spot at 119 Main Street in Steelville at the junction of Highway 8 and Highway 19. It's come through Steelville, come to the only stop sign there is, which is a beautiful thing. Look left, and there we are. You blink, you might miss it, but...
Yeah, if you were there 50 years ago, it's still in the same spot.
Yeah, it's still the same spot. Looks the same.
What a charming, charming story. Well, man, I appreciate you being on the show with us, and I think I can safely say that Kyle Kinsel, hey, he's living his outdoor dream, sometimes inside the kitchen of the Spare Rib. But just as he said, he's a river man. He cooks like meals out on the river, too. And I'm definitely living my outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get outdoors and live your outdoor dream. And in the process, stop by Spare Rib Inn.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, The Fallen Outdoors, Ledco Sinkers and Lure Company, Turnbow Outdoors, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Big Ed's Guide Service, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, On the Hook TV, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, Spare Rib Inn in Steelville, Missouri, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.